Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, do you have a relationship that needs repair? Well, just thinking about repair is a good sign. Better than hopeless. Well, let's talk about relationships that need repair or can use repair. And then the question is, how often? Once a day? Once every 5 minutes? Well, let's find out more about how relationships work and the ways to repair them. And to do it quickly, actually, because there's a book called 5-Minute Relationship Repair, written by Susan Campbell and John Gray, to quickly heal upsets, deepen intimacy, and use differences to strengthen love. That sounds hopeful. So, to help us talk about her book is one of the authors, Susan Campbell. Susan, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter.
I'm glad that you could be part of this this book with John and to be a guest on the show, because it's really super important that we understand the mechanics of our struggles in relationship and how to get through them. And you've been doing this for quite a while, right?
Right. 45 years. I've been a couples counselor.
So you've seen a lot of couples, heard a lot of different stories.
That's right.
Many of them are similar. And
well, there's always some differences, you know, differences
right.
in wants and needs, differences in personality styles. And so that's usually the big challenge, is we're all unique.
Right. And to help people through their uniqueness know why there are ways that they can fix themselves and each other to make a relationship work better.
Yeah, the key is to learn how to not take those differences personally and to really use the differences for deeper knowing of your partner and knowing of yourself. But lots of times people get scared of their differences, like if they have a difference in wants or needs in a particular moment. You know, she wants contact and he wants to work on his computer, something like that. You know, those are the normal differences. So
right. Well,
things that can create blow-ups or fears or shutdowns.
Right. One of the automatic differences in most marriages is the gender difference.
Yeah, indeed. Yes, we're given that, you know, as long as we're hetero, we're given that. If we're not, we're also got plenty of differences. But,
sure,
gender differences are a huge factor, of course.
Right, and women have a different way of needing to argue and communicate, and often men have a more difficult time communicating than women do because they'd rather just go out and hunt, classically.
Well, that's the traditional stereotype difference.
Right.
You know, there's so many differences.
Sure.
But that's a big one.
Right. And I'm also a counselor. I'm an intuitive healer advisor, and a lot of times I'm talking to women about their relationships with men and. And often I find myself saying, well, he's a guy, so let's start from there.
All right. Well, I'm going to differ with you right away, Peter,
okay.
In the sense that I actually would rather promote people getting to know who this guy is rather than depending on any book to tell you or any counselor to tell you that he's a guy.
Well,
when we make generalizations about gender differences, I'd rather have each person realize that this other person in front of you is a totally unique human being, and it's your job to get to know him by listening, or get to know her by listening, asking questions, and sharing who you are.
Sure. Usually that comes out after I've heard some stories.
Right, and it does help her. It does help her relax, you know. And that's a counselor needs to help a person just sort of relax and realize, hey, we've all got these differences.
Exactly.
You know, he's a guy. You're a woman.
Yeah. So often there are these behaviors that we're brought up with, and are ingrained in us, and are part of our archetype, actually. And
yes, indeed. And there are feminine, you know, feminine archetypes and male archetypes that we, you know, typically embody. But, you know, like, right. you know, some woman might be an Athena archetype, like me. I'm, you know, just real strong and active and assertive. And other women, you know, might be a different archetype, more of a Venus archetype, you know,
yeah.
a little more into the typical feminine role and so forth. So we got a range of male and female archetypes out
right.
there.
You're a lot
so
like
if
my...
If you know gender differences, look again.
You're a lot like my wife. She's strong and outspoken and smart and wise and
how nice. Wow. Good for you guys.
Well, we've been together for 35 years, so we keep on working on it. You know, we actually at this point right now, while I'm on the phone with you, I'm in my apartment because I work at home, and she works at home too. So we just took a break because we both got triggered.
Oh, let's talk about that, Peter. That's a good thing to take a break. You know, if you read my book, you know, you don't want to stop you don't want to keep talking and keep trying to prove your point when you're both triggered, because you'll just dig yourself deeper into the hole. So pausing when you're triggered to take a breather is a good practice.
Right, and so you talk about that a lot in the book. There's so much. Your book is really comprehensive in how to understand ourselves in our relationships. And that's the biggest part of it, because you really do have to come from yourself to understand why you behave the way you do, and help your partner understand why you behave the way you do through your own self-realizations.
Yeah, so, and most people don't have a good vocabulary for feelings and for what the deeper fears are when, you know, we say we get triggered. Okay, what does that mean? Can mean for some people the fight response. You know, it's basically fight, flight, or freeze, just so our listeners can get the feeling tone of this. Sometimes, you know, you have this shock feeling when your partner says something. And this isn't just for couples. It could be your teenager or your five-year-old could trigger you, or your boss or somebody at work or your friend. But you get that either fight, you know, my heart rate goes up and I feel like I'm ready for a battle, or the flight, you know, hey, I just want to get out of here or smooth this over. Or some of us, and I used to be like this, like a deer in the headlights. I don't even know what to say or do. Just completely feeling helpless in the moment when I hear something that is unpleasant to hear, let's just say. So anything that you're not prepared for or you didn't want can trigger you.
Right. And
you go into those automatic reactions where then a higher brain isn't online. It's like we call it your survival alarm part of your brain takes over, and then you might do some things or say some things that you're going to want to repair later on. And the good news is repair is possible.
Right, and that survival part is very active.
Actually.
What's that?
I said it's actually mandatory.
Yeah, right, so that we can have some perspective and, you know, take a breather. Let's call it that, too. And then understand. And so a lot of the book is about understanding the way we are, really, individually, why we get triggered, what is it in our childhoods and our personality that creates that reaction that we have. And so you talk about emotions that lead to feelings. You know, some people equate the same. Emotions and feelings are the same. But our feelings are our awareness of our emotions, mental awareness of our emotions. And we know how we feel because we think about how we feel, yet inside the emotion is really more of a visceral experience, a body experience even, because often it's your body is speaking to you, right?
Yeah, it's important to know the early warning signs of when you or your partner are triggered. So how you can experience those are, one would be body sensations. My face starts feeling hot, or I start making fists like I want to go into action. So you notice your sensations. And then some people are more able, some people don't notice their sensations. They're more able to notice their reactive stories, like, here we go again. I can never get it right with him or her. Those kind of stories.
Well, you have a long list of stories.
Yeah, I have. We help people. We give people whole checklist of, you know, have you ever felt this? Have you ever thought this? Just to help prime the pump, because most of us don't have a good vocabulary of our feelings and sensations. You know, we're typically not going around observing ourselves all day, but it's good to be able to observe yourself and know what's going on inside. Then you can choose your responses in a better way.
Yeah, that's the point, is to be aware of your behavior so that you don't react and keep on self-destructing and having a destructive relationship.
Yeah, and yet, Peter, as you know, if you've been together with somebody 35 years, and probably a lot of our listeners know, we do react. We do take our differences personally, or we do get scared when our partner wants something that's quite different or sees a situation quite differently. It's like, this person doesn't get me, or this person doesn't care about my needs. And you know, we could be talking about kids or work or sex or anything or money, but it's not really about the money conversation. It's about, does this person care about me? Or does this person see me as a good person, as an acceptable person? I mean, deep down, there are these, we call them the core fears, and they do come from those childhood wounds, like feeling abandoned or rejected or judged or criticized too much, you know, in the earlier stages of our life.
Right.
We are sometimes primed to hear these kind of fear things coming up again with our partner.
I recently did a show called Love Cycles, where every relationship goes through different cycles of being very romantic, absorbed just in with the brain chemistry that helps make children, and then we step apart, and after a point we realize that, wait a minute, we're not speaking the same language as it felt like it when we were making love. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, this person's not me. And that's a disappointment. He or she is different. And then
that's right. There's normal stages. I wrote a book called The Couple's Journey in 1980. It was a bestseller, and I still sell it on my website. And it talks about the romance stage. Then you go into the power struggle stage, where you start to see and reveal your differences. And then you can go on to the stability stage, where you know how to re-own those fears and go, hey, that's not, that person isn't doing something to me. I've been carrying this fear around with me all my life.
Right.
Let me look into this fear more so I can reveal what my real needs are and get my fears reassured. So that's
right.
What this book is about. It's about how to communicate once those differences start to come up in the power struggle stage, and how to get to the stability stage so that you can get to then the commitment stage, where you actually can make agreements that stick. It's funny, in my work, it takes to stage four to get to a really valid, solid commitment. You have to go through a lot of struggles.
And even then,
kill them before you should make any lasting promises, like having kids and stuff.
Even then, there's always work to do. And
absolutely.
And one of the things I do is I'm also a human design analyst. I don't know if you're familiar with
mm-hmm.
with that, but yes. when a couple gets to see each other's, the human design of how we're born to be, how different everybody is in the actual mechanics of who we are born to be, and realize we're born to be so differently from each other, there's a great surrender in that.
Extremely useful, Peter. I think it's really helpful for couples to have some kind of system to help them understand their differences, so they don't say, oh, this person's against me. This person just doesn't want to meet my needs. No, they're meeting their needs. So
they speak a different language.
It's a donor manual for each other, yeah.
And so it's really helpful to know that the different language that each person speaks, so they can support that. And it's not always easy. There was this one woman who came to me and said, why does her husband always have to be right and con- controlling about everything. We looked at his design, and he needed to be the authority and to have that control. And so she saw that he was born to be that way. So then it was about, you know, understanding it and managing it so it's not, doesn't feel so harmful.
True. And I also wonder, in your point of view, Peter, if underneath the design, because a lot of that is on a personality level, and yeah, there's a soul too that needs to come through and be
right,
somewhat of an authority. But when you get kind of below the personality and the ego needs, there are some just normal, you know, presence skills, like
right,
here's what I am feeling now in the moment. That's the kind of thing that I think then bypasses all those different, we want to know each other's ego needs, like the need to control and the need to feel safe. So when you're in a group, you don't speak up because your safety needs are so strong, those kind of things.
Right. But to honor that.
Underneath those, there's just like these normal human things of right now, this is what I am experiencing in my feelings and my body. And when we can learn how to just report those things, we're very present to each other, and we're getting to that deeper human level together.
Well, for instance, for this man then to understand that he's designed that way and how to live with his wife appropriately that way, to be sensitive to her needs and to be sensitive to the way he behaves so that it works.
Yeah, yeah. And we have a whole chapter on control patterns in our book.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, on one level, I say we're all addicted to control on some level, even though, you know, some people, according to their human design, are like this really my way or the highway energy. There's a lot of different ways to control the outcome of our communication, meaning wanting approval, and so you gear all your responses to get approval, or like I said earlier, wanting to be safe, so you gear all your interactions with people to kind of hide a little bit so you don't get hurt. So those kind of control patterns, we help people analyze themselves. It's not as sophisticated as human design, but it's extremely helpful for the normal, everyday ways that people interact, you know,
right,
ways that we rub each other the wrong way. And when we can admit those, like you said, when the controlling guy can admit that to his wife, you know, she just relaxes, right?
So right,
when we do this exercise with our partner, our partners go, oh, my God, you have more self-insight than I thought. Hey, there's hope here. You know?
That's great. So it's really about being aware and conscious and taking responsibility for the relationship. And not everybody does that or wants to do that. And there are a lot of marriages that don't work because one of, or maybe both, but one of the partners at least doesn't want to work on it.
Yeah, well, some of us are more on a growth path than others, so probably a lot of your listeners would be people on a growth path.
Right.
Other people wouldn't even know what that term means. But, you know, when I first started doing research on couples back in the 70s, I found that a lot of people, when they got married, they weren't on a growth path, but just being married and dealing with this person who I can't understand, it puts you on a growth path. Because now we have kids together and we have a house together, so we have to work it out. That interdependence forces people to learn and grow together, even though they didn't sign up for that.
Right. It's an opportunity.
It really is. And you know, and a lot of people, because I did a lot of interviews with couples, a lot of people, after a while, through their struggles, they realize it is an opportunity. And wow, I'm a better person by being able to see the world, not just from my own point of view, but from my partner's point of view, too. It really does stretch you into a bigger person.
And as you say in your book, to know that relationships are like a three-legged race.
Yeah, absolutely. You learn, you actually, in the couple's journey, being with one person, you begin to become a we And it kind of pops you into the ability to see your common humanity with all. So I think it's a very deep spiritual practice, too, to be a couple.
Oh, I agree.
I'm
very
know,
fortunate.
I never made it to 35 years, but I'm in a close relationship, a committed relationship now. But
oh, good.
Yeah, I think my marriage didn't last quite that long.
Well, this was my third time around.
How lovely. It takes a while. And that's another thing I often say to people is a lot of times your first or second relationships are more like learning relationships rather than your kind of big one, your mating relationship, where you really find your mate. It takes
right.
a lot of practice.
It
but that's what this book's about. It's about taking, you know, like giving you like 10 or 20 years of therapy in one book. People have actually said to me, you know, I read this, and it's like we did this together. We did these exercises. My partner and I did these exercises, and it's like 10 years of couples therapy, it's just in this one book.
Right, and so it's about a 5-minute relationship repair, which actually, in some ways, is it starts off being only seconds because you call a timeout.
That's right.
You pause because you know you're being triggered. And you say, whoops, you know, we got to get out of, we don't want to dig this hole any deeper, so let's just remove ourselves from the action for a little while, take a breather.
Yeah, that's a tool that we believe couples need right away, is the tool of learning how to pause and then calm your nervous system. So we teach couples how to create a pause agreement, how to recognize the early warning signs of when you're triggered, like those stories, those fear stories in your mind or your body sensations or things like anger or judgment. That means you're triggered, folks. You know,
right.
if that person's not doing it right, look inside and notice what your trigger is. And so when I say trigger, I mean really there's a core need that feels unmet to you, like the need to be loved or the need to be respected. And when you can learn how to access that core need and express that in a vulnerable way to your partner, then you're likely to get that need met. You're likely to get the reassurance you need.
Right.
So we basically teach you to kind of dissect a human being down to its core, what do humans really need, and then how do we communicate and get that from one another.
Right. What our core feelings are, our core fears, core needs, and
yeah.
then to come back and bring that back into the discussion with your partner of why you felt you were triggered.
Exactly. And when you bring, that's what the repair means. It means now after you've calmed down and done a little self-inquiry, and like we have little worksheets that help people, you know, and this is what I felt, and this is what my mind story was, and this is the need. And then you go back and report these things to your partner, and that'll get you the reassurance or get the need met that you were wanting to have met.
Right. The one overriding factor that my wife and I have always had is that we know that we're dedicated to a life together, and that our love for each other overrides all of our complaints.
Yeah, and you know, when you pause, Peter, and this is just a quick tip for everybody, whether you buy my book or not, if you guys get triggered and you're going to take a little break, if somebody can just reach out, you know, give the other person a little pat or something and say, we'll get through this, something reassuring like that, like you and your wife already have that implicit understanding. But it's really helpful, you know. Or we're in this for the long haul. Something that's reassuring of the big picture.
Right. Yeah. There was a couple I was working with recently, and this woman was very busy, and her husband was very upset that she had no time for him. And I said, so what are you doing about it? And she said, I don't know what to do. I said, reassure him that you're going to make up for it.
Oh, uh-huh.
Tell him that, you know, you can't be there now, but you know that there's a price to pay, and you're ready, you know, after this is over, you're going to definitely satisfy him.
Yeah, and in our book, we teach couples to let the other person know the particular types of reassurance that work for me, you know, because that one might not work for me. But in kind of together analyzing your core needs with each other and revealing these, you get really down to some kind of hard stuff to disclose. Like, you know, I'm afraid that I'm not lovable. I'm afraid that I'm not good enough for you. I mean, I was working with a couple last week, and you know, the man just had never, ever shared feelings. And by the end of the session, he was saying, you know, I keep screwing up with money, and I'm so afraid I'm not good enough for you. And she didn't know this. She thought that he was like this controlling guy who didn't want her to know anything about the money and was hiding his weaknesses. And as soon as she saw that he was like onto himself a little bit and
wow,
like
what
a humble
difference.
Human being. It was
That's
like,
great.
I mean, they just bonded over that, you know?
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. But you've come untouched with parts of yourself that you might have thought were shameful or something you had to hide, but this is how you become whole, by revealing that in a trusting relationship. Not with somebody who's going to use it against you, but through this process, people see how healing and wonderful it is to be vulnerable with each other, and that makes a huge difference. It's just a positive experience, yeah. And everyone feels lighter after the conversation. After you share your pain and your deeper needs, geez, you feel lighter and you're laughing and you feel like having sex.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure, that's great. So, Susan, we're going to run out of time soon, and I know you have a website that people can get a lot of downloads from and all kinds of things. And,
yeah.
And the book is 5 minute
relationship repair book. If they buy that book,
right? 5 minute relationship
free workbook.
Repair.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a free workbook at the here's the website, 5MinuteRelationshipRepair.com.
That's
and
great.
And that's spelled FIVE, not the numeral. 5MinuteRelationshipRepair.com.
And you also
free
have
workbook and lots of other free stuff there.
And you also have your own website.
SusanCampbell.com. If you're interested in any of my other books, I've written 9 books on relationships, like the one on the stages of relationship. Those are all at SusanCampbell.com.
Susan, it's so great to talk with you, and I've really gotten a lot out of your book. I'm very excited about my future.
It sounds like you and your wife have a great life there. So
we do.
I'm happy to know you, Peter.
Thank you. Same here, Susan. And thanks so much for being on Energy Stew and for writing this book and being such a value in this world.
Thank you.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.